This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. Chris Sampson and I were joined by Elizabeth Strangers to discuss all things Twitter. Amongst other things, we chat best practice, ads, media studio, and provide a significant number of examples from around the world of football and sport. We had to record this podcast in three different cities. Hence, while you might notice a difference in sound quality, try not let that distract you from your listening though, as there is a lot of great stuff from Elizabeth and Chris. Via the Scottish FA, we've helped a number of clubs with various Twitter points over the past year. If clubs need any assistance, please reach out to myself in the first instance. You can do this via the Scottish FA or drop me a message on Twitter or LinkedIn. This is the last show from Chris and I until later in the summer, so enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to show 19 of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and I'm joined as ever by Michael Bokel, Digital Manager at the Scottish FA. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
We're joined by Elizabeth Stranges, who is a Partner Manager for Sport and News at Twitter. That might give you a little bit of a clue as to what we're talking about on this episode. Michael, before we introduce Elizabeth, why did we want to talk about Twitter?
Twitter is one that I think when we've been doing these podcasts always seems to come up in a variety of different forms, whether it's examples that we do in our usual feature or it is just speaking to people from clubs as well, where Twitter is a very important channel for a number of clubs for a number of different reasons. And I think it was a good one. I think there's a lot that can be done with Twitter. I know when we spoke to Michael Parks from BSC Glasgow, a lot of the discussion ended up talking about Twitter, and I think it's just the thinking is if we can have a podcast on Twitter, hopefully clubs will learn a thing or two and be able to improve their output.
Twitter's such a big thing for Scottish football. Sometimes it feels like Twitter just exists, Scottish football just exists on Twitter. Elizabeth, hello, welcome to the podcast. What's your role and your background in sports?
So I'm a partner manager on Twitter's global content partnerships team, looking after primarily sport partners, but also some news partners here in the UK and a few internationally. I started my career with the Canadian Olympic Committee when I was living in Toronto, and then moved over to join Twitter's Toronto office. I think I was like the 8th employee there. And 2.5 years ago, took up a role on the content partnerships team here in London. So I've been in London on the sport team, looking after partners for the past 2 and a bit years.
Why is Twitter such a popular channel for clubs?
Yeah, I think this answer is super simple, but I think Twitter's popular for clubs and teams and athletes because it's popular with fans. It allows the fans to connect directly with the teams, and it allows teams to own their narrative and speak to their fans directly. It's the best way to reach that audience authentically and connect with what's happening. And there's a constant two-way conversation about football on our platform. It's a highly engaged and passionate audience, which I'm sure you are familiar with. It's actually the number one tweeted about topic here in the UK, and every 2 minutes, someone tweets their love of football. And so the clubs are simply where the fans are, and that's on Twitter.
Okay, so I suppose the best place to start then, let's look at it from a top level point of view, Elizabeth. What, in your opinion, makes a good Twitter account? And does tone of voice, branding play a significant role?
Yeah, absolutely. So authenticity is the key. If your brand or your account has the ability to be humorous, then definitely do that. But if that's not the right voice for your account, don't feel tempted to participate in the conversation that way. I think finding your voice and being able to connect with fans and knowing what they're going to respond to is the key. So sometimes that takes some figuring out. Sometimes it happens really quickly. But really, I would say that being genuine and having an authentic voice about what you're speaking to is what makes a great Twitter account. So I recently saw a bank get eviscerated on Twitter for trying to set up a humorous tweet about a bank account speaking to a user, and I just think it was not the right point for a bank to be taking, and so that's where that authenticity piece plays in.
Chris, I'm going to put you on the spot, which I don't normally do, but what? Who do you think in Scottish football, who would you call out as being good at Twitter?
I think Hibs are very good on Twitter at the moment. There's been a bit of a shift in the way that they've been communicating and their output since Kenny Miller came in. Michael, you'll know Kenny very well from his time at the Scottish FA and a and obviously previously at the Scottish Sun as well, he was there. They've had, they're speaking to the supporters in the way that I think supporters want to be spoken to. It's a little bit of in-jokes sometimes, things that are very, very related to Hibs. They're not afraid to shout people out or to kind of plug things that they think are very good from what their fans are doing. They're getting their fans involved in Wallpaper Wednesday, for example. They're just getting them much more... a one-on-one conversation almost a lot of the time, which I think is great.
Yeah, I'd like to say I taught Kenny everything I know, but that is absolutely nonsense.
Elizabeth, what's the best way for clubs to increase their followers?
Yeah, so followers for a super long time were an interesting vanity metric. It was a way for people to show these are how many people follow us. But while that's important, I think it's more how you are seeing and engaging with your content. Are your followers sharing what you have? So followers are coming to accounts for the best content. Your diehard fans will, of course, follow individual clubs, and perhaps they downloaded Twitter to do just that. But those fair weather fans or people that aren't necessarily even fans of Scottish football, why would they be following the club, and what's the value prop of why they should follow your account? It has to be the content. Is what you're tweeting important to them? Does it resonate with them? And that's really the most important thing when it comes to followers. But I would encourage clubs who are maybe hung up on followers or maybe being asked that question by higher-ups who may not necessarily understand the platform, that it is not necessarily the most important thing. It absolutely matters, but really, if your content is great, the followers will follow.
If the content's great, then you would probably hope that the engagement would be great too, and it would follow along with that.
Absolutely, and there's also a number of passive users. So is an engagement someone necessarily replying to you, or is it a like, or is it a video view? All of those have different value, and it's how your team or your club views those engagements. But absolutely, if the content is great, those numbers will tick up.
And just on that, the best way, obviously, to find out how things are working is through Twitter Analytics, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. I would encourage every team or club or even individual to access their analytics. That when you're logged in, it's analytics.twitter.com, and this gives you an amazing idea of what's performing well for you, what your top tweets were from the month, your follower growth and things over time. And so it's a really interesting place to start when you're considering making any changes or just really starting to analyze how your content performs.
Michael, from a Scottish FA perspective, how have you looked at increasing followers and engagement?
A lot of what Elizabeth actually said there, if you look at how we started, when I came in, we really only had two accounts. We had Scottish FA Twitter account, at Scottish FA, which had a significant amount of followers, still does, and that had been because it had built up over time. It was the only main account from the Scottish FA. We've also got a Scotland Supporters Club Twitter account, and that acted more as a customer services platform. What we realised was that we, on one Thursday, and I think I've said this before, on a Thursday we could have been putting out a disciplinary update, but then also at the same time wanting to sell tickets for a Scotland match and also trying to have a little bit of fun with our content around the Scottish Cup. And to do that all on the one channel, it was all over the place. It was like different personalities. So we're a couple of years down the line now, and we've got at Scotland NT, and we've got the at Scottish Cup, which is our official Scottish Cup account. Now, if I look at both of those accounts, yeah, I definitely want the follower numbers up. We see we get spikes in followers when big things happen, whether it's matches. Yesterday, as we record this, yesterday was our Women's World Cup announcement, so we got some more followers there. Scottish Cup around each round. There is various things we've done in the past. We've looked at using Twitter ads, and we'll come on to that later on. We've reached out. We've tried to use various sort of influencers, if for the lack of a better term, and engage using them for some of our content. So we've used personalities to either feature in our content or be part of something. That obviously helps carry that message as well. And we work with partners. So yeah, look, there's different ways of doing it. But some of the best ways that we've done it is the simple ways of really good content.
Something I wanted to ask about was hashtags, Elizabeth. Are they still relevant at all?
So I would say that hashtags tags are definitely still relevant. They help users follow conversations or trends. It pulls those tweets into relevant feeds. It also helps our curation team find content that aligns with the stories that they're exploring, and then also helps our data teams measure conversation around topics. So hashtags are definitely still important, but what I would always compare them to is salt. There's definitely a too much salt and a too many hashtags limit, and so it's being strategic with what you're using. What are you tweeting about? What is the official hashtag of what you're tweeting about? So I know that that one can often be tricky with annual events. Is the year part of the official hashtag or not? So finding out what that is from whatever governing body is kind of managing that is really important. I know we had an emoji around the Scotch Cup recently, which was really cool, and we loved having that live. And that's something where anyone who is using the official hashtag is actually rewarded with seeing that emoji pop up, and that encourages usage around an official hashtag. It also encourages people to click on it and review it, and then that's where they're able to see content that's also using that hashtag. So still relevant, be sparing with them, so don't use too many, and then also try to be strategic. So do your research in advance, know what you're using. If there's match hashtags, make sure those are the right ones. There will definitely be official ones for the Women's World Cup this summer, and so that's something that we would encourage every team, every association that's tweeting about them to have the right ones. Especially because sometimes the three-letter trigrams for countries can often spell things that are not the right words. And so I know that FIFA puts a lot of thought into which ones they're using.
We've obviously had the Scottish Hup hashtag, as I've said. Michael, how have the Scottish FA been using hashtags in their tweets?
Yeah, I mean, we look at, as Elizabeth says, we try not to go too over the top. What we try to do, we actually use hashtags to help brand up and differentiate and make it easy to understand what our tweets are about. So if we take national teams as a starting point, we've got, well, the most relevant one at the moment in time is hashtag SWNT. So anytime you see that, you know it's definitely about the women. We've got, when you look at Scotland National, the men's A is slightly different. We've got our campaign around Nothing Matters More, which we do, which it really is the sort of distinguishing hashtag for anything that we do, Scotland, men's A. But then across all our squads, youth team squads, we've got hashtag SCO17s, for example, or hashtag SCOW19s, which again, if you click on those hashtags, you'll find everything that we've been posting around those youth teams. And we're starting to see more people pick them up. And then to bring all those youth teams together, and this is where we kind of were conscious about using it, but we found that we're getting good traction with it, is hashtag young team. So, which Elizabeth, you probably won't be too familiar, but it's more a sort of Scottish thing. But yeah, we've been using that. So they do work for us. And then obviously, as Elizabeth said as well, when you go to FIFA, UEFA, for example, they've got all the country abbreviations, and then you've got match hashtags, which we'll use match hashtags to join conversations and make sure that we are getting included in various things as well. Scottish Cup wise, yep, at Scottish Cup. Now, in the past, I think when I came in, and we talked about this on the Scottish Cup marketing podcast, there was a campaign already in place. It was the Unrivaled campaign, and the hashtag was hashtag Unrivaled. Now, people were seeing that hashtag and not really putting two and two together with what it was. They weren't engaging with it really. Some did, and fair play to those that got the whole campaign, but for somebody that was maybe dipping in and out of Scottish Cup, they would see Unrivaled and didn't really know what it was. So Jack and myself, when we were involved in the setting up the new campaign that is all about original moments and unforgettable memories, we just went hashtag Scottish Cup. Everybody uses it. We were seeing everybody used it anyway. And it's the one that we want to use and get our brand out there. So there's two as we go into the final. We found, and this is because this has happened organically, it wasn't us driving this, but this is what happened was, around Scottish Cup finals, people use hashtag Scottish Cup final. So we went, well, let's just embrace that. And yes, our main hashtag's at Scottish, hashtag Scottish Cup, but that hence why if you use hashtag Scottish Cup final, you'll get the emoji as well, because we know people are using it. So yeah, look, emoji's been great. We've seen more accounts use the hashtag. And I think one of the things is a governing body, and I'm sure if there is any other governing bodies listening to this, they'll probably find that trying to get clubs to participate in your campaigns or to carry certain messages, use certain hashtags, it's not always the smoothest of processes, or they've got their own ones that they concentrate on and that. But with Scottish Cap, the beauty of going back to what the hashtag Scottish Cap, and to have that emoji, it was great to see, you saw more and more people using it. So yeah, look, it's been beneficial for us. It certainly helps get people involved in a conversation around Scottish Cup as well. So hopefully, as we go forward, we'll develop these sort of things and see. But we're always tracking them, and that's where the analytics and having a look at what works, what doesn't work, and if there is something that comes out that people start using, as I said, hashtag Scottish Cup final, we'll keep an eye on that and we'll maybe have to adjust accordingly.
When it comes to a match day and live tweeting, what are the recommendations from Twitter?
Yeah, so I love how much I've seen teams increase their output during matches. I also love that the sentiment echoes that of fans, which is cheering on the squad, reacting to things that have happened. It's the NBA playoffs right now in North America, and I think that's been a really cool example of seeing teams reacting the same way the person beside me is. But there's definitely some tips for drawing up your game plan when you're going to be on Twitter. So one is, don't share every single moment from the match. Your timeline should not be a score ticker. I think it's obviously important to keep fans updated, but I would more so focus on big plays, game-changing moments, key time updates. So at the end of each half, or if there's a timeout or something like that, like take advantage of those moments. I also feel like GIFs, short-form moving video, and professional images tell the story better than plain text. So obviously there's a time and place for both, but if you do have media assets to use here, we would strongly recommend it. Use in-game video highlights as often as you can, but we do understand that these aren't always available to clubs due to rights issues with broadcasters and things like that. But when you do have access to them, we strongly recommend using them. And then features that we have, and I would recommend this not just for in-game tweeting, but in general, threads, image and video cards, and moments keep the timeline as fresh as possible, but also as interesting as possible. So it really highlights a varied amount of content on your timeline.
You mentioned moments there, Elizabeth. Can you expand on what they are for those that maybe are not too sure?
Sure, yeah. So moments are a tool that we have that actually allow the user that creates it to tell a story. And so it used to be a horizontal scroll, but now it follows the vertical scroll, which is the way that people are using Twitter anyway. And so you're able to add a different amount of tweets to it and tell a story that way. And so as a club, you can include athlete tweets. If you want to include user-generated content, you're able to DM those and ask them for permission to include it in a moment. But it's a great way to own a narrative or perhaps tell an interesting story, and we are seeing a lot more clubs and content publishers using them. And so I would strongly recommend checking them out. You can learn a lot more about them. And I'm going to plug this a couple times, but it really is a super useful resource. It's media.twitter.com. It was recently revamped by our team that heard all the asks for a guide of how to create the best content on our platform, and it's become really helpful where it's actually split out. There's a sports section, there's interviews with social media managers from different leagues and teams around the world, there's case studies, and then there's also just product updates and best use cases. So you can definitely learn more about them there, and I would encourage anyone listening to check it out, media.twitter.com.
And in terms of, obviously, the match day, and it's something that, yeah, look, I think we look at it from a Scottish Cup point of view. So when we are looking at semi-finals and final, and I know I was having this conversation with the guys in the SBFL as well about Cup finals, and yeah, I think you can easily fall into the trap of live tweeting everything that happened, but neither of us, and from a Scottish FA point of view, it's neither of our teams in there. It's like, yes, it's our member clubs and it's our competition, but we're there to add a different dimension to what the clubs are doing, what there's various enough accounts out there that are live tweeting every aspect of the game as well. So we look at it from that way and look at a different angle. But from a national team point of view, I think we look at it as, right, we appreciate that the game's on Sky Sports when it comes to Men's A, and we are conscious that not everybody has that, and Twitter very much is the place to get involved when it comes to the big games. I think we only have to look at the Champions League semi-finals to show just how a sort of place Twitter can be when things are happening, even whether it's Messi scoring free kicks and being Messi, or it's the comebacks and how Twitter explodes to life. And we look at it from a national team point of view at a Men's A level and go, right, we're not going to tweet every single foul, every single throw-in, and we'll go, well, in a couple of recent games, a little while without tweeting because there's nothing really been happening. What we will do is, yes, if there's chances, if there's major incidents, and we'll try to interject that with photography as well and video. We're in a fortunate position where some of our broadcast partners do the live clipping, and it's not something that we can clip up ourselves, but what we do is embed those videos in our own tweets. So there's lots of sort of different options, and I know as you go down the levels in Scotland, you don't have that ability to have live footage of a game or live clips, but there is different sort of graphics, as Elizabeth said, from that point as well. So, and with the match day experience, this is where obviously things like graphics work as well, and GIFs, and you can create these and prep these before games, etc. So I think we're seeing some great stuff across Scotland. I've seen some more elaborate sort of creativity, especially at clubs at a lower level, which is great.
Yeah, I think just to elaborate on that, I would definitely say that certainly there are restrictions if you're at a lower level and resource constraints, but there's also a huge opportunity for creativity when there aren't that many hands in the honey bucket, so to speak. And so when you can't use in-match highlights or whatever, but you don't have as many sponsor restrictions, you have the ability to creatively create content that fans cannot find anywhere else, and that's an appeal that clubs have and that we'd encourage them to take advantage of. So evaluate what you can create with your players. And one of the clubs I would point to on this is Bristol City. I believe that they're an English club, but they started the whole tweeting a GIF when a player scored. And one of their media correspondent actually said that you were seeing players wanting to score that weren't naturally the goal scorers because they wanted to see those tweet flags. And now most Premier League teams are tweeting content like that, and most clubs that you'll find at all will be tweeting the GIFs, and that's just a unique way of something that they created that had some humor to it. It involved the players, and it was shareable content that fans were really responding well to.
There's that responding well part, but there's also the commercialising it too, to earn revenue in terms of sponsoring GIFs and sponsoring the social media output.
Absolutely, yeah, great point.
How can clubs do more in responding to fans? What can they do there?
Yeah, so I would say it's one of my favourite uses of the platform is the interaction between clubs and their fans, or athletes and their fans. You may not be able to respond to every single tweet, or nor should you reply to every single tweet, but engaging with fans makes them feel special. A like, a reply, or a retweet from your favourite team or athlete or celebrity is the new autograph, so to speak. And so it's a great way to kind of keep fans engaged, make them feel special, make them feel appreciated, and then also just create a conversation. So it's no longer just howling into the void. If fans are responding to you, you're able to respond back to them, and that's a way to continue individual conversations, which is not something that's really available. It was never available prior to Twitter, but isn't really available in a lot of other formats. I've seen some really hilarious examples of this. I'm going to use a North American example here, and also a hometown example here, but the Toronto Blue Jays are Toronto's MLB team and Canada's only Major League Baseball team, and they recently responded to a fan who was asking about the condition of an athlete on the team, And they responded from the official account saying that the athlete's out with a minor injury, but he should be back next week. The fan then responded asking for the source. And the Blue Jays responded back to that saying, literally us, the Blue Jays. And I think that that's just a really funny use of the fact that, oh, this user forgot that they were interacting directly with the team, and that's something that they're afforded on our platform, and that's an amazing way to kind of engage those fans. They got news directly from the source. I would also say that I think that teams in American leagues are really brilliant at this, and even at interacting with fellow clubs. So beyond just responding to fans, we see a lot of great banter between clubs. And I know Man City recently used the power of their platform to highlight Peterhead's FC Blues 2 championship by announcing their own championship. And that's a really interesting way of using your platform, including others in the conversation. And then also just creating a back and forth between, like, where else would you say Man City could be ahead? And I think that that was a really interesting use of the platform. So, highly recommend engaging in conversation with fans, with followers, and even with other clubs and teams.
Yeah. Man City's use of that Peterhead got a lot more traction in Scotland for their league win than probably they would have got otherwise.
Nobody saw that coming whatsoever.
So good. And also, I mean, Man City has an insane amount of followers and obviously is a super popular team, and so it's also them using their power to uplift others. And I have some other examples of that as well, but I think that that's a really great way to engage fans of clubs that aren't even your team. So that was really funny.
I hope Peterhead went out and asked him for a friendly after this. If we move on to then, we've talked about the content, and video obviously is so big for Twitter. What are the sort of recommended video best practices, Elizabeth?
Yeah, growing your reach and engagement by showing your followers what you're talking about instead of telling them is super powerful. Video is massive on Twitter. We see more than 2 billion video views every single day around the world. Their videos are 6.8 times more likely to be retweeted than GIFs and 3.6 times more likely to be retweeted than photos. So simply they're shareable, and so they're something that you should be investing in. In terms of best practices, we do recommend making it short. So the feed moves fast. People's attention span are obviously moving quickly as well. Tweets with copy under 100 characters have a 13% higher brand message recall. And overall view time than longer than that. Obviously, there are exceptions to all of these, but these are some general notes. And then including people, so including actual humans in the first few frames of a video increases the view rate, drives higher retention, and leads to higher emotional connections. So you're more likely to have an emotional response to a video if you see a person within the first few frames. Also, our video autoplays without sound. So the first 3 seconds of a video doesn't actually need audio to capture attention and drive response, but this is where you should let the visuals speak for themselves and be really powerful. When someone watches the whole video, the sound turns up all the key metrics, so the dialogue has more of an impact than music. And videos with captions are 11% more likely to be viewed and generate 28% longer view rates. So speak without sound. Keep them short, use people in the videos whenever possible, and then really the most important thing is just to be relevant. So the number one reason people come to Twitter is to discover something new and interesting. This feeds back to that authenticity voice. Make sure that the video content that you are putting out there is relevant to the people that will be seeing it.
Great. And in terms of live video, I know Twitter have pushed quite a lot on the live video front. I mean, From a Scottish FA point of view, we went live with our women's national team squad announcement for the World Cup. We've gone live in the past with youth matches. What is the sort of direction from Twitter when it comes to live video, and how powerful can it be?
Yeah, absolutely. So live video has grown massively on our platform. We've actually seen live video views increase 254% year over year, so from 2017 to 2018. I love seeing it used by teams for things like press conferences, behind-the-scenes content. The squad announcement yesterday was amazing. And so I think that that's a really important piece here. Someone's going to watch a live stream. What is it that they're seeing that they wouldn't otherwise be able to see? And sometimes it's content that they wouldn't be able to watch on TV because they don't have a subscription to that broadcaster, and we've found a way to they're putting on Facebook or on the platform, especially when it comes to live video. You'll see a lot of clubs or a lot of teams putting live video on Facebook without considering putting it on Twitter. And I think that that's the wrong way to think about it. I would definitely, if you're trying live video organically on other platforms, I would encourage you to try that on Twitter as well, as you'll see that your fans often engage really well with live video.
Michael, why is video big for the Scottish FA?
I think I'll take a lot of what Elizabeth said. I think you can certainly get a message across a lot easier in a video, and we use video for different things, and it all depends on what we're really trying to achieve. I think some of our, if you look at what our most popular sort of video content's been in 2019, tail end of 2018, it's definitely been around, well, the Paul McNeil Football Saved My Life video, which we've talked about before, masses of views because it resonates. There's message in there, it's what people want to see. We've done a lot around trying to cater to our different audiences, and it's not a case of one thing fits all. So when we are looking at creating content, we're trying to figure out, right, who are we trying to create this for, what is the message we're trying to get across, and what we're really trying to achieve. So we'll do a lot of, or we've been doing a lot more of behind the scenes content to cater to those that have got a strong interest in football and what happens at a Scotland national teams level or from a Scottish FA perspective. Scottish Cup, we know that goals and nostalgia works well, and we use that to talk about the story of the season, story of the Scottish Cup. So it's about telling those stories on the Scottish Cup channel. And then there's a lot of stuff that we'll look at, and we'll try to use videos from an educational purpose as well. And without giving away too many secrets, we're looking at an explainer sort of series going into next season, around who we are and what our role in Scottish football is, and then try to break down a lot of the sort of misconceptions about some of the stuff that happens. So look, again, it's, as I said, it's not one size fits all when it comes to video. What I do say is we've tried to go for more quality over quantity this year. We've done a lot of video. I think in my time, I think we were looking at numbers, and it's frightening how many videos we've put out. And yeah, there's some things that, as Elizabeth says, especially on Twitter, short can travel well in terms of getting that reach. There is sometimes, and I mean, I think I'm going to raise it when it comes to the things I've liked, but the European Tour, right, the content that they put out, one of the most recent ones was Andy Sullivan, and they continued their series of the Hole-in-One Golf Challenge. Now, spoiler alert, he gets it in the end, but it was like a 6-minute video or something like that, and I caught myself watching the whole thing, and I didn't worry about how long that video was. Now, if somebody said to me, and I think I've used this as an example on this before, is I remember I was having to learn about some of the new copyright law for online, and if somebody had just put a PDF in front of me and went, cheapers, right, I'm going to have to read this whole thing, I ended up caught myself again. I watched a 9-minute video and didn't even realise I'd been watching it for 9 minutes. If the content's good and it captivates the audience, and it's what the message you're trying to get across, it'll work no matter how long it is. But generally, what we'll tend to do, especially when it comes to Scottish Cup stuff, is we'll have a lot of sort of shorter content, and we'll throw in the odd longer one as well. And again, Twitter analytics. Without plugging too much, but it helps us greatly understand exactly what's working, what's not working, what do we need to do more of, what do we not need to do more of. And look, I know this podcast is about Twitter, but we'll find that certain video content works really well on Twitter and doesn't work anywhere else. And that's the same as some stuff might work very well on Facebook or Instagram or YouTube, and maybe not as well on Twitter, but generally if it works on those other channels, it's going to work on Twitter as well.
I suppose when you look at video, YouTube is absolutely massive. Long form content is common on there, so I don't see why longer videos wouldn't work on Twitter, and videos working across channels even.
I think the YouTube thing is really interesting because it's like we're going to YouTube with the intention of watching something, and then whatever you watch from there, whatever suggested to you is based on what you view, but you generally go there with an intention, whereas when users come to Twitter, they have what we call a discovery mindset, so they really just want to discover something new and interesting, and this makes them more receptive to content that they wouldn't have necessarily searched for. And the European Tour one is a great example of long-form content that worked really well. BT Sport put out nearly 10-minute videos after the semifinals of the Champions League, kind of recapping, and those were so emotional that everyone I know watched them at least once. And so I think that there's definitely exceptions to the rule. I just think that when you're trying to capture the general audience, does the content, like, does it need that much time? And if it does, then great, then people will watch it, and if that's the story that you're telling, it's more so, this is how people are using the platform, how are you capturing their attention? And there are ways to do that that I mentioned.
Yeah, I definitely say, as just going back on the point as well about Twitter analytics, is we've started... Video views are fine, but actually understanding completion rates, and it doesn't have to be the full completion rate, but even 75% of how much of that video has been viewed will give you an indication of how good that content was. So yeah, there's a lot of tools there to figure out what works and what doesn't work.
Let's move on to Twitter ads in the media studio. Elizabeth, can you take us through what the media studio is and why clubs should be using it?
Sure. So Twitter created Media Studio to be a video hub for content creators where you can manage content, measure performance, and launch live streams. It's also a place to access all your past duty content. And so in March, we launched in March of last year, we launched Producer and Media Studio, which is a self-service tool for creating high-quality broadcasts. So using external encoding hardware and software and professional cameras, you're actually able to go live from there. So being able to geo-restrict all of these amazing like video tools that you require are now being brought in-house. We strongly recommend using Media Studio as a way to organize your content output, analyze your content that's already been put out there, and then also go live from Media Studio as well. And then through Media Studio, you can also access your analytics dashboard.
Yeah, I mean, we use Media Studio and post a lot via Media Studio. And the beauty is, obviously, you can schedule via Media Studio as well. And it's a great thing for us, especially when we've got a lot of content going out, to be able to find when we're repurposing videos, for example, or graphics. The search functionality is great in that as well. Just going along the lines of Media Studio, but looking at, and I mentioned it earlier, looking at Twitter ads and how clubs can potentially be doing it. Now, we've done a podcast that was on online advertising, and we mentioned Twitter there, but from a Twitter perspective, what would you say is the best use of Twitter ads for clubs?
Right, so I think that what makes Twitter really unique is that it's essentially the largest searchable collection of human thought to ever exist. Right. And so because of that, because people are coming to our platform, the public platform, they're telling you what they're being about by the content that they're liking, you're able to target those users in a really specific way. And so because of our robust targeting, if you have an ad campaign that you're trying to reach a specific audience and you know that they're on Twitter, this is a great way to do that, especially if your content is timely. So if right now you're trying to reach Game of Thrones fans, this is the place to do it. That's where they're talking about it and what's relevant to them. It also tells you a lot about how your content performs with the audience that you're trying to reach. So Twitter ads are super effective. We say that it's the best place to reach the most engaged audience where they're most receptive. So they come to Twitter in a discovery mindset. They're receptive to your content. And running ads on our platform generally sees huge success that can then be analyzed and used for a better performance feature.
Great. I'm conscious of time, and there's a couple more things we want to ask you, so we'll just jump on. I know, obviously, I deal with you on various things, and one of the things I've been doing is acting as a point of contact for clubs, and one of the questions I seem to get a lot about, and I'm sure you get it all the time, especially on via Twitter, is verification. And I know it's not as common as it was, and we get questions about for players, individuals, academies, etc. What is the latest on Twitter verification?
Yeah, this is definitely a question we get quite a bit, and one that I wish I had a better answer for. But currently, we have paused public submissions as of our last update, which I believe was in 2017. So public submissions for verifications are currently paused as we're focusing on new authentication and verification programs. So there are exceptions to this, like politicians who have decided to run for office and need to be authenticated so that voters can understand where the message is coming from. But I will say that we definitely hear you on this. We hear the pubs and recognize that there is a desire and a need for this, and our team is working hard on a new process, and we hope to update you on the new one very soon.
Elizabeth, can you give us some examples of clubs that you like and the work that they're doing on Twitter?
I really like seeing what Rangers FC is doing by lifting up their affiliate clubs, by retweeting stuff about their women's club success. I think that that's a really important way of bringing attention to maybe less solid accounts, but also kind of creating that true squad vibe of everyone who wears this logo and is a member of this football club. This is how we treat each other, and this is our successes, and we share in all of them. So I think that's a really good model for other teams that are considering doing that, and a great way to lift up women's and junior sports. I love that Partick Thistle's mascot. First of all, I love Partick Thistle's mascot. I love that he has his own account. I'd love to see him take some notes from Gritty, which is the Philadelphia Flyers mascot in Philadelphia, who's super cheeky on Twitter, because I would love the world to see more of Kingsley, but I really like that they're capitalizing on the fact that the mascot has fans and it's a cool way to follow them.
Kingsley's head's going to get so big now.
Yeah, please follow at this mascot. But I mentioned them for previously, but I think that what Crystal did, Crystal City started with the goal scorer gift, has been adopted by so many clubs. It's a great display of creativity when in-match rights are restricted. And so they said that they scored 8 goals in their first 2 games after introducing these, and 7 different goal scorers, which meant 7 different goal gifts going out. And it became a craze within a week. So I think that that's a really creative use of it. But I look forward to a bunch of teams one-upping me, and then we can talk about new ones next time, and I'll give you some others.
Is there any Twitter accounts that are worth following? Obviously, you mentioned Twitter Media, etc.
Yeah, so obviously Michael Bockel and Sport Marketing Scotland, one and two. I would strongly recommend following the Scotland national team ahead of the women's team's first appearance at the Women's World Cup this summer. I think that if you are Scottish, if you're a fan of football, definitely get behind your girls and follow the team. And this is the best way to kind of get those updates. And then obviously also at FIFA WWC, where you can get official tournament updates. FIFA does a really good job with most of their rights being restricted to broadcasters, of kind of engaging fans in different markets, and then also just bringing attention to the stories around the Women's World Cup. From a sports business perspective, it is a bit North American, but Darren Rovell, if you haven't heard of him, he's great, and he always offers a unique perspective on sports and sports business, talking about sponsorship deals and things like that. So I think that he's an interesting follow. And at Twitter Media, definitely for the latest from our team, I would definitely encourage you to check out the media.twitter.com website. But following at Twitter Media ensures that you're seeing that content. I would even recommend turning on notifications for them so you're always up to date on the latest for our partners.
Great. Sounds good. And I'm conscious that you've also got a day job to go back to. So we'll finish it up there. I mean, Elizabeth, that was brilliant. And in terms of, there's a lot there for clubs, again, at all levels to take something away from it and implement it on their own channel. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Michael, let's finish up with our usual feature. Bit of a task with the show notes for you with this week, come with all these examples that we've talked about already.
Yeah, so I think we've already touched on mine already. It's a European tour, so they've been releasing video content. It's brilliant, and I think I have mentioned them before on this podcast, and I just wanted to call them out again in terms of doing something that is fun. Engaging content shows the personality of the players. Now, as if it's obvious that players there are their own people, that they're not in teams. The European Tour, they do represent the European Tour to an extent, but because it's an individual sport. However, they've got a great relationship with their players in terms of showing the benefits of doing this content, what it can do to the European Tour, what it can do to the game of golf, and what it can do to the individual. And I think when you look at, as I mentioned, the Andy Sullivan example in the hole-in-one challenge, now there's a couple of other hole-in-one challenges out there. They've done lots of, a lot of it's the challenge side of things, and I think as you don't necessarily have to be into golf to like these videos, which I think makes them so great. My favourite one of all time from the European Tour was the fastest ever hole in their world record attempts, and they've actually done a follow-up with that. And again, it's just taking something like golf, something that you, a certain shot that you have to play all the time, or a certain thing that you do, and just putting a different spin on it and making it very engaging. And I know golf fans always look forward to seeing what the latest video is. I know Sky Sports News picks up the European Tour ones. I think the latest one with the Matt Wallace getting pranked by Eddie Pepperell was being shown on Sky Sports News, as is the other one. So it's a great bit of content that works across different platforms.
Yeah, my examples this week, I've got the UEFA Champions League Unfiltered from BT Sport. I think, as I was saying earlier, long form videos on Twitter, they definitely work when the content is great. I was coming into work the next day, and basically the thing I did when I first logged onto my computer was firing up these videos and watching the highlights, watching the impact that the Champions League had from the previous evening. And seeing those games, the games probably made it better, to be fair, but those videos are just a brilliant summary of what went into them. My other example is from Derby. They obviously faced off against Leeds in the English Championship playoff, and it's a little bit on Twitter beef. I think there's been a bit of back and forward between these two clubs this season, obviously, with Bielsa and Spygate coming into things earlier on in the season. And Derby kind of played that perfectly with them kind of singing Leeds' song that they had for Frank Lampard. So, yeah, all for the Twitter beef and kind of reactions for that. And think that's had quite a bit of a reaction across the board, even from journalists, positive and negative. Michael, where can people follow you if they want to on Twitter?
At Michael Bockel, yep, on Twitter, and you can get me on LinkedIn.
And you can follow me at Sports Marketing School. Thank you very much, and we will see you again next time.